Hello and welcome to Conversations from the Adoption and Fostering podcast. In this podcast, I speak to Rachel, an adult adoptee, adopter and social worker. She shares her story of being adopted in the early 80s and the unusual perspective that this has given her in relation to her uncommon experience. Rachel also speaks in relation to her work with birth families and how all of these factors have influenced her parenting and views on adoption. As always, if you've experienced of adoption, fostering or special guardianship from any perspective and would like to share that on the podcast, please get in touch through the Facebook page or the Twitter page, or you can email us at andfpodcast@gmail.com.
My name is Rachel. I suppose that's who I am in terms of identity of my name. I am 46. I'm originally from down south and have migrated up to the Midlands during my time on this earth with a Welsh. I was born Scottish, adopted by Welsh people and lived in England most of my life. So with a brief stint in Wales. So I like to kind of, I'm a bit of an amalgamation of identities and things. But I'm also adopted. I was removed from my birth family due to not having a good time with them. When I was five, went into children's home for 2 years and then was adopted. And I'm also an adopter. So we've had our boys now for 8 years. And I'm also a social worker. I've been a social worker for 18 years in child protection and done the whole gambit, really, fostering, child protection, adoption, training and things like that. And I'm also a runner, a swimmer and a game player and a TV reader and a guitar player, everything. I just like, you know, life, really.
You know, excellent. Kind of, you said a few things there that were quite interesting because we have adopted people coming on and often sort of your age, if I'm respectfully your age, that often the narrative is that it's all good. The narrative is that you were perhaps handed over in a mother and baby unit, or you were kind of removed or not removed, or you were, you know, you were part of that generation where children were relinquished. Yeah.
I think that's, it's not my story. And I think this causes quite a lot of confusion for people. And I think it causes quite a lot of angst as well at times. But it is my story. My story, so I was removed age five. I was born in 1975 and I was just five, so 1980. So if you think about the Children Act, it didn't come into 1989. So no adoption sort of, you know, legislation and stuff was very, very different. So yeah, I suppose I was of that. And I've done a lot of kind of thinking about this and reading about this and researching to this, is I was really first kind of generation of adoptees who were removed because of abuse and removed because of trauma and things like that. So up until, you know, I've got friends who are in their very early 50s or very late 40s, and they were of that relinquished or unmarried mother, that sort of stereotypical story, I suppose, of the sort of 60s and 70s of children, unmarried mothers. You couldn't possibly be a single mother, so you went into mother and baby unit and relinquished. I hate the word relinquished because it kind of gives some kind of notion of consent, whereas actually I don't think there was much consent involved in some of this. But I wasn't. I was removed due to quite significant physical and emotional abuse. And it is abuse, and it's taken a while to kind of reconcile that and come to terms with that. And I don't know many other people of my age who are also adopted where that is their story. The people who I know that who were removed, and it was a child protection removal, are at least 5 years younger than me, 10 years younger than me. So no, you're right. And I think that causes some issues around sort of my contemporaries and my peers who are also adopted. And I've come to kind of realise in the last few years, and definitely in the last 6 months, that there's no one narrative of what it is to be adopted. And the adoptee's voice has been missing for so long. But I think what we mean by the adoptee's voice means very different things. And I'm beginning to learn that there are at least two, maybe more narratives about what the adoptee's voice means. And for me, the adoptee's voice is anybody with lived experience who's been adopted. And for all of us, that's going to look different. There may be similar journeys, there may be similar experiences, similar stories, but actually it's different. And I think one of the things that comes up for me, and you've picked up a really good point there, Alice, that for me, and I can only speak for me, I kind of had to be adopted because there was nobody, the abuse I suffered, I could not have stayed there. It was not good at all. And I have a very large birth family. And for whatever reason, I don't think we've ever really got into it. I actually know my birth family. I went looking for them in my late 20s and I found them, both sides. And my paternal side particularly is huge. My paternal side, my father was one of eight. So there was lots of aunties and uncles, and only one of those, he's the second oldest. So, and I'm one of 26 grandchildren of the maternal grandmother on that. And nobody had me, and nobody had my brother. I've got a brother as well. Nobody took us in. Everybody knew that that was happening, generally speaking, at the hands of my mother, birth mother. And nobody took us in. So not only was I removed through abuse, I've spent a long time in my life feeling rejected, particularly by my paternal side of the family. So I've kind of got both sides of that rejection and removal. And I think I had to be adopted, and I'm glad I was adopted, and I'm very, very open with anybody. Adoption worked for me. It was good. There was a significant trauma that I experienced in my later life, in my teenage, well, my late sort of primary years, my teenage years. But that wasn't specific to my adoptive parents. That was something else that happened. But regardless of that, I am forever grateful that I am adopted, and I'm forever grateful that I was adopted by the people who adopted me. But that's my lived experience. And I suppose when we come across people who say, well, all adoption is bad, adoption shouldn't happen, adoption is this, adoption is that, I think that's very true for a lot of people on the narrative of maybe relinquishment, forced relinquishment, the narrative of, you know, actually there's people may have been able to bring up children, and if they'd had more support, and, you know, not having the mother and baby having. But actually, in my case, to say all adoption is bad, all adoption is awful, is basically saying you had to stay in a family that was abusing you. And that quietens my lived experience, that puts my voice in it. So I think when we're talking about adoption, we have to be less generic about what that means for people, because it means different things for different people. And I find it really gut-wrenching and awful when I read and hear stories from people who have not had a positive experience of adoption or have been traumatized through the separation from their birth family.
Yeah.
My separation from my birth family was not traumatic as such. It had to happen. I was glad when I was moved out of that situation. The trauma for me happened prior to being adopted.
Yeah.
That was the trauma. The removal was had to happen, I suppose. So I think, to go back to your original point, I think it is an unusual story for somebody my age. And I think maybe I have a different perspective about adoption because of that. I don't know.
No, I mean, it's fascinating, because I think that you can speak with that, the benefit of hindsight, a long-term hindsight of that experience of being removed. Can I ask you then about perhaps the experience of you sort of being taken and sort of grafted into a new family? Do you have recollections of that? Were you party to all of that going on?
Well, I was party to it in the sense I was there. I had little choice, I suppose, and little control, which I suppose is part of the issue, isn't it? When you're 5 years old, you have very little choice what happens to you. So actually, you know, again, I can speak about this now, but it's taken me a long time to be able to reconcile what happened to me. So basically, there was a lot of physical abuse from my birth mother. I actually really struggle calling her mother. I actually struggle. I got a Christmas card from her today, and I see the writing on the envelope, and fucking hell, you know, and I just have to open it. And I have to open it in a good way as well, because I have adopted children who see that letter come through the post, and I don't want to influence how they view their birth parents. I want to give them but that's another issue. I'll talk about that in a minute. We'll put that on the back burner because I'm going off thing. But my journey.
I mean, it's fascinating to open a window into all of everything has layers.
It's really hard. It's really hard because I want to rip the card up and I want to go fuck off. Whereas they're watching me open that card from my birth mother. And I don't want them to be thinking, well, I have to tell my birth family to fuck off, because actually I don't want that for them. If they want to see their birth family later years, then I have to be open to doing that for them and helping them with that. And I certainly don't want to put them in a position where they're going off and doing it by themselves, because they don't want to have that experience where they think they shouldn't be doing it. So anyway, yeah. I'll come back onto that in a bit. So to answer your question, I was removed at 5. And when I say removed, I was literally removed. I came down the stairs. I still have real visions of it. I could draw out a house for you. Came down the stairs and there was a social worker. Her name was Stella. She came down the stairs. She was there. She had 2 suitcases at the bottom of the stairs. My birth mother was standing with her. And me and my brother came down the stairs and we were out of the house within an hour in a children's home. We spent quite a long time in court. I remember hanging around a court and I didn't know what it was. It was just a room to me. I've later in life realised it was a court, but to me it was just a room. It was green, this acry green. It was horrible. It smelt. And then we're in a children's home. Within literally that day, I was in a children's home. We didn't really know why at that point. To be honest, I was quite glad that I was out away from my birth mother, because she was incredibly aggressive and physically abusive, and she was incredibly emotionally abusive. And unfortunately, I guess still is at times. I have very little to do with her if I can help it. But so then I had 2 years in the children's home, lots and lots of memories of that. We'll skip over that.
Okay, well,
we don't have to skip over. They're not great places. If you think about, you know, what we know about attachment and what we know about trauma, you know, if you've had a traumatic abusive start, your attachment patterns are going to be quite disordered if we look at what we know about trauma and that. So to go into a home for 2 years where you are one of many, you're literally a number, and your carers are being paid to be there, and you will go to bed one night with one set of carers and wake up the next morning with another set of carers because they're on a rota basis and they're on a, you know, it's a shift pattern. For children with trauma and attachment-based needs, there's nothing about the 1980s setup of a children's home that worked for them.
You had no say in any of that, but I'm just curious as to why foster care wasn't sort of an option.
Well, I have no idea. I was in the home for 2 years. I haven't ever got to the bottom of why I wasn't put into foster care straight away. But we were in the children's home. I don't know whether the local authority where I was, that was their policy. Yeah. I don't know. There for 2 years and then we were adopted. But we weren't. This sounds like a sob story and it's not, but it is awful. And I think, I just think I got to 46 and I'm quite happy that I function as well as I do, because then we left the children's home when I was 7 and went to live with my adopters. But during that process, my adoptive mother got cancer 3 times. So our adoption was actually delayed for 5 years. So I wasn't actually adopted till I was 12. We stayed with them. We lived with them on a foster care basis from 7 till 12, but I wasn't actually adopted until December. So I was 12 in the November and I was adopted in December. So we had 5 years of just being in this limbo land because they wouldn't let my mum do the adoption order.
But you knew that was the intent, did you?
Yes, yeah. And I changed my name. You know, we couldn't change our name legally until we were actually adopted. But I was always known as Baker. I was my birth name, known as Baker, for a very, very long time in that 5 years. And I called my mum and my mum and dad. It was really difficult for the first few. I think my mum and dad probably struggled because for the first few months I refused to call them mum and dad. I actively refused to call them mum and dad. But then they've always been my parents from that moment on, really. I've never seen them as anything different. But the adoption was just a sort of, the adoption order going through was just almost like the paperwork. It's like living with your partner for years and you get married and you get a bit of paper. That's what it felt like at that time.
That connection was genuine.
Yeah, for me, my adoption happened when I moved in with them. The paperwork bit of the adoption is something separate for me. But I don't know whether looking back that did maybe create some, again, stability issues. I don't know. And there was other stuff going on, which I'm not going to go into, but there was other stuff going on as well that was I was working through at the same time. So I don't know. But then, spent my sort of from 7 onwards until now being an adoptee and being removed from care experienced adoptee.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine that from that start in life that there's not been a sense of adoption being very present with you Present is
a very good way of looking at it. I suppose, you know, not many of us have a huge number of memories before the age of five. Some of us do, some of us don't. Most of my pre-five memories are unfortunately not good experiences. Some of which I'm still triggered by, some of which I'm not, and I have to work harder. I don't have many childhood memories like a lot of people pre-five. So everything after that and going up to seven, it is about being in care and being adopted. That's my identity as I've got blue eyes. I've got, you know, I've got 10 fingers, 10 toes, and I'm adopted. That's always been my story. For as long as my living memory is, really, I suppose.
And so again, it's a very different narrative in the sense that your parents, it was on the table from day one of meeting your parents that you are adopted and you are becoming part of our family. But what was your experience of then sort of thinking about your past? And I feel like I'm leading this conversation. I don't really want to lead it.
No, it's fine. There was always, so this presence being adopted, it was always a case. So I've always struggled up until sort of like, you know, adulthood really, and kind of reconciling some of it, actually finding. So I found my birth parents at 26, I found my paternal family, and 28, I found my maternal family. And I'm 46 now. So that's 20 years ago that I start, you know, I found them. And up until that point, I've always struggled on my birthday. I've always found that quite a difficult day in the sense of, are people thinking of me? Am I important to anybody out there? And my parents, and by my parents, I mean my adopters, but they are my parents. So my parents have always made birthdays very special. They're almost sacrosanct in our house. They're special things. But there was always that missing gap. There was always that kind of, who's thinking of me? Are they thinking of me? What are they thinking about me? So actually the day before and the day after my birthday has always been traditionally a lot easier. So I almost have a 3-day birthday in my mind because I actually miss out my birthday a lot better in the last 20 years. But there was always this gap of information. So not only was I adopted or removed into care pre-Children Act, I was removed into care and adopted pre anything, really, when it came to understanding adoption and trauma and attachment, none of that stuff. So I had literally no photos. I've subsequently found out that majority of the photos of me, of a baby, have just left the family. And considering I have a big paternal family, and literally there's one photo of me and I was handed it and they said, but we don't actually know whether it's you or your brother. There's 10 months between me and my brother. And so I've got this photo of a baby, but nobody knows whether it's me or my brother. And so it's quite difficult to, you can't engage with this photo because it might not be me. So that's quite hard. And I have photos, I have a few photos that an auntie on my maternal side took, but there don't seem to be any photos in my paternal side at all, really, of me. So I didn't have photos. I don't know what I look like pre-five at all. I have no idea. Unless this photo of a baby is me, I've got no idea what I look like, which is quite unusual. I think the other thing about adoption is that nobody in your life or my life has ever, I haven't got one. So think about this, just anybody listening, the gravity of this. There is not one single person, not one single person in my life who's always known me. So I've got my birth parents who knew me when I was born, but I was then removed from them for, you know, 15, 17, 18 years. So they didn't know me then. And then my adoptive family only started to know me when I was 7. So I don't have one single person in my life who has always known me from the time I was born to age 46. That's quite unusual, unless you've had my experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite stark that, you know, as someone who wasn't adopted, then I've never had to even give that a thought. It's a thought I can't quite think because does not compute.
Exactly. It's so astound. It's so whoa that actually, unless you've got that, you can't think of that because you've not experienced it. So, you know, children who were removed at birth, okay, they've had people who have always known them from the moment they came onto earth, maybe, or maybe there was even a week where there wasn't. So, but they wouldn't have had the experience of pregnancy. So unless you've got an adopter who has experienced the pregnancy with the birth parent, and even then, you know, we look at nuances of what actually that means. But my story and people who are like me who were removed later on, you know, age 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, have, and then don't have contact with their birth family, have not got one single person in their life who's always known them. And that's hard. You think of all the things that you could ask, that people could ask you, that you've got somebody you can go to. I've got nobody that I could really go to and ask what my whole journey's been like, because nobody's been there with me. That's very isolating. Nobody holds my story. And most people I know have somebody who holds that story for them from the moment they were born.
No, that, and that really reflects what I've heard other adopters sort of reflect that in different words, but that sense of other people holding parts of the story and but them not necessarily sitting in the same room.
Yeah.
So you have to, and the relationship with those people is complicated. And so, yeah, there is no one definitive place where we can get a biography.
Yeah. And so that's quite isolating. And just simple things like, you know, I hope schools are a bit more minded towards this now. But when I was growing up, we used to have this, and I do call it stupid, I'm sorry if that's not a word that people like, stupid thing, where we used to go into the classroom on the 3rd of September or whenever you used to enter your new school year, and there'd be pictures of babies up on the wall, and it'd be guess the baby competition or guess the baby thing as an icebreaker. And I could never partake in those because I didn't have a baby photo. So I was always the one at the beginning of the year. Automatically, I was different. And, you know, automatically that became something I couldn't engage in. And just, you know, you have a birthday party and your mum would walk in and one of your friends would say, oh, what did she look like when she was a baby? Did she ever have naked baths and stuff like that? And your mum must go and go, don't know. Now, I don't know if that specific conversation happened, but that kind of thing.
Which constantly brings it back into the room, doesn't it? That's your sort of status as an adopted child.
Definitely. But even now at age 46, I go to the doctors, okay, and I get cross about this now. I go to the doctors. I've had the same absolutely fantastic GP surgery for 20 years now. They're brilliant. But they ask me a history. They ask me for my history and I'll go, I'm adopted. Not so much my actual GP now, because she's brilliant and she knows I stick with her now and she knows, but other GPs. And you just think, can it not be in big red letters somewhere or on a file so you don't have to constantly say, I don't know my medical history because I'm adopted and nobody in my life seems to know my medical history either.
Don't know, won't like tell. That kind of...
Yeah.
What then led you at sort of mid-20s? I mean, I feel like it's a whistle stop two or three of your life because there's so much going on. In mid-late 20s, you decide that you wanted to go and find these people who you were under no illusion. You know that these people are potentially hugely triggering.
Yeah. And that was exactly the reason why I went. Two things happened. One is I started to do some work experience as I had an idea that I wanted to go into some kind of work with people. At the beginning, I thought it was going to be law, and it became social work for a specific reason. But I was working in a school for children with emotional behavioural difficulties. It's called an EBD school at the time. Hate that expression, but that's what they were referred to at the time. And this kid came up to me and he went, Miss. I went, yes. He went, you look like my mate. And I said, who's your mate? And he went, and I knew that I had birth siblings and I knew their names. We're going to call my birth sibling John. Okay. And he went, you look like my mate, John. And I was like, oh, what do you mean? My mate, John. He says, you well look like him. And I was just like, there can't be many people living in the area that this boy's talking about looking like me with that name. So I went on, it wasn't Friends Reunited at that time. It was like Friends Reunited, but it was for schools. And I went on to where I knew his school was and I found him and I made a connection with him. And it turned out to be him. And that's how then I found my birth mother. But before that, I was also training to be a social worker at that point. And I decided that I wanted to know, I got my files and I wanted to know I did that because I wanted to know what happened to me. So I wasn't continually questioning and being triggered by other children's stories that I was going to come up against. So it was a way of, and I entered counselling very deliberately at that point to process. But I wasn't offered counselling. The file counselling, case file counselling, I got access to record counselling, was appalling in my case. It is the law. And I suppose they didn't break the law out in the sense of they said, are you okay? Here's your files. And then they stuck me in a room and left me to read them. And they went, are you okay at the end? So, you know, they didn't break the law, but it wasn't great. And the local authority I work for now are much better at it. But my experience 20 years ago, it was appalling, absolutely appalling. So I very deliberately entered counselling for the first time in my life to deal with that and what I'd found out through my files and everything. So I then had some addresses and some details and I went looking.
I mean, was that something you did alone? Were your adopted parents, were they walking alongside you or were they, where did they sit into all that? Because they must have had feelings about your biological parents as well.
Yeah, they did. And in those days, so I did have contact with my birth mother and my adoptive mum supervised that contact at the time. So she actually, my birth mother and my adoptive mother actually know each other, knew each other in that relationship. And my adoptive mother had some very well-placed and strong views about my birth mother that she didn't share with me at the time. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But so I told my mum and dad, you know, being an older child, but I also think who my mum and dad were, adoption was never a secret in our house. Mm. It's always the way we became together as a family. And we celebrate that in for us. And I told my mum and dad that's what I wanted to do. And when I was going to go and find my birth father, my mum was like, it was quite funny. We do laugh about it. I have laughed about it with her. She's like, that's cool. And then when I said I'm going to find my birth mother, she's a bit more, oh, okay. And I think, I don't know whether that was about, maybe it was easier to support the other gender because my birth father was never going to usurp her role as mother. Whereas my birth mother, I suppose, was a threat. But she was really, they were both really good. And my adoptive parents were just brilliant. They let me just go and do it and they supported me. And then when I came back from meeting my birth father, I was very, told them all about that. And I get on really well with him and I get on really well with my little sister and his stepmom and that kind of nuclear bit of my paternal family. And then I met my birth mother two years later through finding her through my brother. And it was horrific. It was just horrific. When I went back and said to my mum exactly what it was, my mum just kind of, you could almost see her physically relax. And she went, yeah, that was my experience with her, however many years ago as well. She hasn't changed. And I think that was quite, you know, I think she was prepared for the worst, but actually for her, she was never going to be usurped. There's no way. My birth parents are very much my birth parents. I love my birth father. I think he's lovely. I think he's great. I love the immediate nucleus family of my birth father, but he's my birth father. And my parents are my parents. Very clear about that.
Yeah, and you don't have to make any explanation of that, do you? That if that's how you feel, and that's, you don't have to justify that to anyone, do you?
No, I think it's been hard though, because you know, I think I used to work, so my last 8 years of social work up until April, I mean, another job now, but in 8 years previously, my job as a social worker was solely with birth parents in adoption matters. So I therapeutically and practically supported birth parents who were going and had been for adoption.
Unpick that for me. I'll be honest with you. I'm having boundary feelings and, you know, I'm looking at my PCF1 and thinking, oh, right, well, is that not a potential minefield for you?
Yes and no, because I think, I do think that, you know, I have this thing in life that we are all humans. And if we drop our labels, I don't know, of birth mother, adopter and bin man and social worker and lawyer and whatever labels we all attribute to ourselves and each other, at the end of the day, we're all humans. And we all have the same bodily functions and we have the same emotional needs. We're humans. And I think that birth parents in, as a social worker of 18 years, I've only probably come across a handful. I mean, 3, 4, 5, maybe people who I think would struggle to have any capacity for love or bonding with another human being. 99.9% of birth parents that I've ever worked with and ever met love their children. They haven't, they either can't or won't in terms of being able to parent the children and prioritize the children's needs, but they are human beings. And the grief of a birth parent who loses a child to adoption through whatever means is huge. And I've always felt that, and I've always had empathy for that, I think, because of my story and because of my journey. And actually, I think it's been very, very helpful to have that understanding of adoption and what that means for, from all sides. And I loved my work with birth parents, and I only left the job in April because the job that I've gone to is a job that I've wanted for a very long time.
That's fair enough.
So I don't think I've ever really had to reconcile it, because I don't have, I suppose I'm very open-minded about adoption. I'm very open-minded in the sense that, there's no one story, there's no one narrative, and I'm very clear about that. And I think if you can have that ethos of these are human beings, a majority of the birth parents that I've ever come across out are people who have a history of trauma and a disordered attachment themselves. And I think if we don't start looking after these people, then we're just going to continue this cycle into society of trauma and abuse, attachment disorder, trauma, abuse, attachment disorder. We have to break the cycle somewhere. And I felt very, very much called to that job when it came up, and enjoyed it. And I think I was good at it, and, you know, didn't ever really feel I had to reconcile it.
No, I mean, that's perfectly fine. And I feel similarly to you, is that my experience of work, of meeting people who've had their children removed, you're constantly holding in tension your human empathy and compassion for people Absolutely. Who've had probably the worst trauma possible, removal of a child, against their capacity to care for a child.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's really hard when you have people who have not been able to look after a child or have chosen other people above their children. And I would never for one moment condone a child being not looked after or abused or neglected. And I don't condone it. I'm very clear when I work with birth parents, I do not condone their behaviour. I don't get into sort of any, I'm very clear that your behaviour is not okay. But I'm also very clear that you are a human being, therefore, not worthy, but needing of compassion and empathy. And I think you can do both. In fact, I think if you don't have empathy as a social worker, you really should not be in that job. And it is a skill to separate the behaviour from the person. It's a skill. But if you don't have empathy, I don't believe you should be in the role of social worker. I don't see how you can be.
It's a whole topic of conversation. It's a whole podcast in of itself, what it takes to work in that space and maintain dignity whilst not condoning behaviour. All of that is a really complicated one. So I wanted to kind of move you on, if possible. We don't have time. To move you on into relation to you, your decision to become an adoptive parent.
It was a fairly easy decision in lots of ways. I'm married to a woman. We therefore have to have assistance in some way, shape, or form of producing children or having a family. And I think neither of us felt particularly, we wanted children, we absolutely wanted children, but we didn't feel particularly the need to be pregnant and want to have our own biological children. That wasn't something either of us felt we had to do in life. It is for some people, and that I'm great, but for us, it was our choice. And I think because I am adopted, myself and my partner have been together 26 years as well. So, you know, she's been through finding my birth parents with me and everything that's. So adoption is very much part of her world as well because of being married to me, I guess. And it was, we believe because of that, that adoption is if done for the right reasons in the right way, is as good a way, for want of a better phrase, of having a family and caring for children and nurturing children. So it was a very easy decision for us. Once we decided we wanted children together, it was a very easy decision that we decided we were going to adopt.
And how did you find the process then of sort of being then put through the scrutiny and the, you know, the hoops and hurdles that are put in the way?
It was an interesting process, for negative and positive reasons. I think it was incredibly difficult at the time. The social worker we had, I think she found it quite difficult assessing another social worker.
Yeah.
And I think I was put through maybe some higher scrutiny than perhaps other people are. I mean, there were questions that I've asked lots of other adopters whether they were asked, and they certainly weren't asked some of the questions that I was asked. And I think there were some issues around being a same-sex couple adopting at that time. I think even in the 8 short years that we've had between us adopting, and things have moved on regarding LGBTQ plus adoptions, but we were very much scrutinized on that as well, and asked some questions that I don't think anybody should be asked. There's no reason, I think, to be asked some of the questions that we were. And so in that sense, it was quite tricky in terms of sort of oppression, I suppose, theisms.
Yeah.
But in other ways, it was also part of the cause, and actually finding we were foster carers before we were adopted, so we already had a form F through part of the adoption, the foster caring stuff. So yeah, it was all good in that sense. It got us where we needed to be. So
yeah.
The matching process was interesting. That was quite difficult at times, because my wife is a drug counsellor in another local authority. So a lot of the children that we were potentially could be matched with, we couldn't be, because either I knew or knew people that worked with the family, or she knew or knew people that worked with the family. So it did take us quite a while, and we had to go out of county in the end.
Yeah.
So
then you've got children. So obviously we're going to keep them confidential, but what has the experience of being an adoptive parent been? I guess there's two things that could happen. Is it reflected, has it sort of shone a light or opened up a window into your adoptive parents' kind of experience? But then also, has it worked either way as well?
Yeah, I think it's been a double-edged sword. There are some aspects of parenting that my wife finds a lot easier and a lot smoother, because she's not catastrophizing, for want of a better phrase, all the time. So from a social work point of view and an adoptee's point of view, I suppose sometimes I see, or I worry about, and I'm concerned about possibly some of the things that could go wrong. You know, I hear about adoption breakdowns all the time, or, you know, I know perhaps some of the feelings that my children could be susceptible to. So I'm very eager to not let that happen for them. And sometimes I put a lot of pressure on myself, and therefore a lot of pressure on them that isn't healthy. And I've learned a lot not to do that, and how not to do that, and why I shouldn't be, or it's not healthy to do that. But in other ways, I think both my social work experience and my adoptee experience has really helped and enhanced my capacity to parent the children and understand where they're coming from, and understand some of the nuances, you know, just some of the things like, we're not lucky to be adopted. And actually, you know, if you say somebody who's been abused or separated is lucky that they're adopted, we get what you mean. What you mean is aren't they fortunate that they've got you as parents? But actually, don't say they're lucky to be adopted, because what I experienced that as an adoptee is, aren't you lucky that you were so abused and so neglected that you then had to be separated from your birth parents to be with these wonderful people who have adopted you? So that, I think, I'm very careful with, and I try to protect my children from, and we're very clear with our friends and family that we don't want that kind of language used around our children. So I think it's a bit of give and take. I think there have been things where I do put pressure on myself and it's hard, I make it harder because of my experiences. But then there are other things where it's a lot easier because of my experiences.
Can I ask then, we've had a couple of social workers on recently who've been either adopted or been adopted and adopted. How's that influenced things like post-adoption support? Have you found, you know, has it been a good experience for you?
Fortunately, we haven't needed a lot of post-adoption support.
Right. That's good.
We have therapeutically parented from the day we had the children. And I think that has definitely been because of my work experience as a social worker. And I've had a very heavy interest in attachment and trauma way before we adopted the boys. So I work with a very well-known company who do adoption and trauma training, and I train in that stuff. So that, to a certain extent, has not been an issue. And I've forgotten the question, and I'm really sorry.
We're just talking about adoption support and
haven't needed a lot. When we did think we were going to need some, it became a little bit problematic because I was working for the adoption team in my local authority, who also held my children because we'd gone past 3 years. So for the first 3 years, placing authority has the children to work, and then you become your living authority. So because I worked in the adoption team who would have been providing us that support, we would have had to have been outsourced to another local authority. Yeah. And we're very aware that if we do need post-adoption support, that would have to happen. But at the moment, we've had them 8 years. They've been living with us 8 years. We haven't needed much. So not something that...
Long may that last.
Long may it last, because it's going to be very complicated if and when it does need to happen. So,
I mean, you've been really candid in relation to a whole host of aspects of your life. Mm. So thank you so much. I'm conscious that often people have things they'd like to say. So, I mean, is there any questions you were hoping I was going to ask that I haven't asked?
No, not at all. I think it's just interesting. I think what's really interesting, you've kind of said some stuff that I've kind of, like the whole bit about the age thing, my generation of adoptees, it's always been there for me. But actually, I've not ever spoken about that very much before, apart from asking people or noting where people have kind of come from my generation. I suppose that's one of the very few times that I've ever really spoken about the fact that I have a different narrative for people of my age group. So you've actually asked me some stuff that's kind of gone, oh, how do I think about that? How do I feel about that? And that's quite interesting. It's been,
I mean, potentially that's quite isolating, isn't it?
I think it is isolating. Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the things that I've struggled with in recent months being on Twitter, for example, is that there is quite rightly a movement about adoptees' voices at the moment. I think it's been a long time coming. I think adoptees' voices have been significantly missing from the narrative around adoption. But the problem is at the moment for me is that a lot of the voices coming out about adoption voices, the hashtag is adoptee voices or something similar. And for me, the main narrative coming out is people who have not had a positive experience of adoption and who have a lot of trauma around adoption. And that's heartbreaking. I really struggle that people adopt and traumatize the children further in that process.
Yeah.
That's absolutely, it's too heavy to even try and handle. But I think one of the problems that's happening at the moment is it's adoptee voices, but actually not if you've had a positive experience of adoption, please. We don't want to hear that narrative. We just want room for the other narrative. Now, a lot of those voices will say, well, you've always had the voice of, isn't adoption great? Isn't adoption wonderful? My answer to that is no, actually, that's not been our voice. That's been the adopters' voices. And that's been children's services voices, agencies' voices saying, isn't adoption great? Actually, the adoptees' voice of even having a positive experience, I've not really ever been given the opportunity to talk about my story as an adoptee and how that's been for me. I've talked about it, but I've never really been talked to about it. And I think there's a danger at the moment of dichotomizing adoption, because I think there is unfortunately two camps, particularly on things like Twitter, and it can get very nasty. And I've had some very nasty experiences where I've kind of gone, you know, actually, could we stop using language like all adoption is not okay, all adoption is awful, because actually not all adoption is. And when I've dared to say, stupidly dared to say, not all, I've then had a lot of vitriol, a lot of abuse back. I've had personal messages on Twitter that are just astoundingly disgusting and abusive, and I've had to block people. And I think that's sad, where a group of people who have not been heard are now infighting because there's this almost hierarchy of adoption. And I find that heartbreaking in itself, because we've all not had our voices spoken. When people, as I say, when people say, but you've adopted, you know, you've had your positive experience being heard. Actually, no, I haven't. And for you to say that all adoptions are bad and all adoptions are awful, you're actually negating my lived experience. Your lived experience has been negated, and that is awful. And we don't want that. But please don't then negate my lived experience.
Yeah.
Because your voice hasn't been heard either. And I suppose that's the difficulty at the moment I'm experiencing as a person, to the point as I dread seeing that hashtag now, which is a shame.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can't begin to, coming from the group of with power and dominance, you know, from an adopted group, it's hard to observe, but it's also, I have no real understanding of that experience other than observing it. Are you optimistic though?
I hope so, but I think what needs to happen, do you know when you're in groups and you're in sort of communities, there's always this storming stage, isn't it, where everybody has their rage and everybody has their issues, and it becomes, I think for me, what I'm beginning to understand, even in the last past few weeks, is that in certain areas, certain countries, certain communities, adoption looks very different or can look very different. And I think the narratives need to be understood by people. So what I've understood is, looking at people's stories and reading their stories and listening to them, particularly on Twitter, is a lot of people who are saying adoption is bad, adoption is awful, are saying it within the context of this subject that's coming up at the moment about terminations and abortions,
yeah,
and adoption being the alternative option to that. I think there's so many problems with that, having that ethos of, oh, don't terminate your baby, adopt it instead. I think there's so many issues with that. But I think if you are one of those children who have become an adult, who was in that position where you could have been with your birth family, if it wasn't for the ethos of the day of single parents or not being able to cope or whatever, then I think you're going to have a very different experience and understanding of adoption. I think if you've been adopted by people who have spent thousands and thousands of pounds buying you or paying for your adoption, you can feel bought. And that's going to give you a different narrative and a different perspective of adoption. My perspective of adoption is none of that. I was removed through abuse and I wasn't bought, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think I'm beginning to understand that because of that, when I pop up and say, not all adoptions, mine was good, we're not on an equal playing ground. We're not on the same page. We're not looking at that narrative from the same place.
Yeah.
And I think that's what needs to happen to start with within the adoptee community. I think we all need to understand that each other has a different journey. We're coming from different places. And to understand that before we can then go forward.
Yeah.
But we do need to stop the infighting. We need to stop that for our voices to be heard and taken seriously.
But I guess if I'm putting my thinking head on, I think that in some ways you're an outlier in the sense that you are that bit older.
Yeah.
I say that politely.
No, go for it.
I didn't fall out with you. You're that little bit older, so that you are reflecting maybe the views of the Children Act generation, those you may be 30 and below, who are probably not in a place where this stuff, I mean, obviously there are people who that is true, but maybe there's a bigger group of, not at the time you've had to reflect on it.
I think there's some truth in that, but I also think that I am unusual, maybe not unusual, I don't know, sort of collectively, but within the people I know, I've worked through my stuff at 46, where I'm able to say, do you know what? I was abused and neglected. And I can say that, and I can process that as part of my adoption story. And I don't say it to get any, you know, I don't want people to feel sorry for me. I'm very factual about it. I accept it as part of my story. I think there are many people who to say I was abused and neglected is actually really, really difficult. So they're not the people we're seeing on Twitter. They're not the people who are telling their adoption story. The people who are telling their adoption story are the people who I'm seeing. It's really difficult to explain. I probably get myself, you know, you just don't know what people are going to think. I think there is one narrative that I'm seeing a lot of at the moment, and it is the people that have been removed from people who perhaps could have cared for their children had they been of a different social standing or married or had more money and more support. And that must be terribly difficult to know that it could have been different for you if other people weren't making decisions for your birth mother. Whereas in my case, my birth parents made decisions not to look after me. That's very different from a parent having a child torn from them against their will.
And that whole culture of, you know, we just did a podcast recently with someone, the whole culture of, it's a positive thing to give your child up. It's an act of love. The time is quite a consuming narrative, but 20 years on, it's like it doesn't add up.
Yeah, and I think for some people, that is part of the reason they genuinely feel that. They feel that I've met a birth parent I can think of in particular who actually would just, that is her narrative about why she relinquished her child for adoption. She did relinquish, but that doesn't negate the fact that she has absolute guttural grief about what she had to do and why she had to do that, and that hasn't traumatized her, and doing that hasn't traumatized her, and that she hasn't wished she could do something different.
And that's what's hidden.
That grief that is hidden. And I think working with birth parents, I've worked with a lot of birth parents who have lost children to adoption, but have also lost children to miscarriage and stillbirth and early child death. So the same person has lost a number of children through death and through adoption. And every single one of those people, and I'm not saying this is the same for everybody who's gone through this, but the people I've spoken to and have shared their story with me, every single one of them, without exception, has said they find the loss to adoption the hardest, because there's nowhere to go, there's nowhere to grieve, there's no closure, and you don't get sympathy. And they have said that their children that they've lost to adoption have been the hardest, because they know those little people are out there and they just can't touch them and see them. So I think, you know, when you hear that as somebody within the same person who's experienced loss of children a number of different ways, the magnitude of that loss for adoption suddenly hits you. And I don't think you can't not have empathy for them, for those people.
Yeah.
And I think that is also a hidden voice and a voice that needs hearing about that grief and that loss. Because parents are vilified. You know, birth parents are vilified in the process. You know, if you look at the triangle of adoption, you've got the child, the adopter, and the adoptee. The adopters are the ones that go to court with everybody thinking sun shines out of them. And aren't they magnificent people who are going to be able to parent these children? But if we're in order that to be happen, another set of parents have been taken to court and basically been vilified and said that you can't parent these children, you're abusing these children. That is, you know, either end of the scale. And, you know, actually, we're all humans. And that gets lost, I think, in the narrative of adoption.
Yeah, we want it to be a simple, happy ever after story, and it just isn't.
I think for me, the balance has always been for me that I'm glad I'm adopted. Am I glad that I had to be adopted? No, of course not. But given what experience, would I like to be somebody who was born into a birth family, grew up in that loving birth family, being nurtured, being included, having that identity, then yes, I would have chosen that for myself. But given my early situation, I would also choose adoption for myself again and again, all that being the same, because I couldn't have lived in that, in those circumstances.
Yeah.
But it's not something I would choose as a life story for somebody.
No. I'm really conscious we've spent a long time talking, so I really appreciate you've given me loads to think about, and a really unique insight from, you know, given all your experiences and when you experienced adoption. So thank you so much for coming on, and thank you so much for sort of being brave, because I know that there's an element of risk putting yourself out there.
I might not read the comments.
Never read the comments. Never. Never read the comments. So thank you so much for coming on, and really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Al. Thank you for asking me.